time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
A few weeks ago, Kelson Boys High School in West Auckland said they were at the front of an unsupported attempted takeover to turn the school into a charter school. As well as this, more recently, the New Zealand Campus of Innovation and Sport, a charter school set to be established next year, was signed with a trust that did not exist. Amendments have also been made to the Education and Training Act, removing a clause requiring school boards to give effect to Te Tiriti o Waitangi. The move has seen backlash from the National Iwi Chairs Forum and a growing number of schools who have launched a petition against the move. Finally, the controversial Regulatory Standards Bill has passed its third reading and is now set to be implemented into law. The bill previously received 156,000 public submissions, with 98.7% of those voicing their opposition to the bill. For our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court, I spoke to him about these topics. I started off by asking Court about Kelston Boys High School and the New Zealand Campus of Innovation and Sport, and how concerning these developments are for the ACT Party.
Well, the charter schools legislation and policy is intended to help kids have better choices in education. And when we look at Kelston, for example, the reason that Kelston Boys has been identified as a suitable place for a charter school is because that school's faced long-term challenges. Now, parents and students have voted with their feet. The roll was around 1,100 students in 2010. It fell to the mid-600s by 2022. It has lifted slightly since then. But even with that increase, the school relies more on out-of-zone enrolments than in-zone families, which just indicates that there's a sustained lack of confidence amongst local parents and kids who want to know that they can go to a good school and that when they go on to the next thing, to higher education or training or work, that they won't be judged by having attended a school that doesn't meet community expectations. So, look, the proposal for a charter at Kelston is entirely legitimate, and that isn't exactly what the legislation is supposed to do. You also mentioned the trust error, the naming issue around New Zealand Performance Academy. That was simply an administrative error. I understand that under a previous trust name, the same people, the same organisation, the same financials, simply having changed their trust name, they hadn't updated their application documents to New Zealand Performance Academy Aotearoa. I understand that that's been rectified.
But how did this fall through the slips? And I also want to touch on Kelston. Most of the school board are in favour of it staying as a state school. So are you essentially saying that you would like the school to be converted to a charter school?
Well, that's not up to me. That's what the Independent Charter School Authorisation Board is for. They will determine whether the proposal has the capability and evidence required to improve outcomes. And that's where boards like Kelston, despite being well-meaning and people with the best intentions, don't necessarily have the capability and the competence to improve outcomes. Now, when I was living in that part of Auckland, we had a great principal at Kelston called Graham Henry, who went on to become the All Blacks coach. He inspired students. That was a huge magnet for people in the community to want to attend that, send their sons to that school, because it was a high-performing school with a high-performing principal. Clearly, something's gone terribly wrong in the intervening years, that the school role has essentially halved. And so, whatever the school board might think about the current situation and how things are turning around, actually, this is where the opportunity to evaluate what they think they can achieve versus what a proposed charter can achieve. This is the right place and forum to do it, through the Independent Charter School Authorisation Board process.
Charter schools as a concept are already quite polarising. Could these recent cases lower New Zealanders' confidence in these schools?
Well, they're not polarising amongst parents and students who have attended charter schools and got great results out of them. I know young people who have attended Vanguard Military School who would otherwise have not remained in education and training, and those young people have then gone on to start careers in construction and other industries. Now, Yeah, it might be polarizing for those who are absolutely wedded to the concept that only governments can educate children and only in a one-size-fits-all model, but actually that's not what parents and students are asking for. They're asking for school choice, and they're asking for schools that are local and that can deliver high-quality education without them having to send their children out of zone or to independent schools or to Catholic schools, for example, because that's the choice that people in Kelston have been making for over a decade. And, you know, I actually feel for them and for the next generation of young people, you know, currently going through primary school and then intermediate, who want to know, you know, Mum, Dad, am I going to be able to go to school in my local neighbourhood, or am I going to have to go somewhere else because, you know, I want to achieve an education and I can't be confident. So, look, that's what charter schools are for. They're delivering choice. Parents and students are voting with their feet. You know, they want to go, and that's why we have such a significant number of applications for charter schools across the country.
I just want to repeat the latter part of that question again. Could these recent cases with Kelston Boys High School and the New Zealand Campus of Innovation and Sport lower New Zealanders' confidence in these schools with what we've been seeing in the space?
I don't think so at all. And like I said, you know, parents and young people are voting with their feet. They're choosing charters. And that's why more and more charters are being proposed. And that's why more and more charters will be stood up over the next year or so. I think the results speak for themselves.
You mentioned that more charter schools would be set up, and you are correct. The government has allocated $153 million for 15 new charter schools and the conversion of 35 state schools into charter schools for the rest of this year in 2026. What is the party doing in this space to mitigate the concerns we have seen with Kelston Boys and the New Zealand Campus of Innovation and Sport heading forward?
Well, like I said, around the New Zealand Performance Academy of Aotearoa contract, that was a naming error, so that's been rectified. And I understand that David Seymour, who's the minister responsible for charter schools, is confident that, that's been sorted out. And around Kelston, you know, I'll reiterate for the third time, those who are demonstrating and showing confidence in the charter schools approach are parents and students who are seeking choice, seeking something different, whether it's a Pacific Girls Academy, whether it's a sports academy built around the Phoenix football team in Wellington, or whether it's a school run by Te Ao Māori organisations delivering education and training for construction and practical skills in Hawke's Bay. You know, that's the kind of choice that people have been crying out for in education for a generation. David Seymour stood up charter schools in 2014 to 17 when he was Associate Minister of Education. Previous government, you know, through their own ideological dislike of them, patched them over and brought them back into the Ministry of Education framework. But look, yeah, this is a new dawn, and Kiwis are voting with their feet, students and parents, to come to charter schools. So I think this approach has got a really bright future.
Speaking more to education and sort of moving on to the next topic, we have also seen an amendment to the Education and Training Act removing a clause requiring school boards to give effect to Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Why have we seen these changes to the Education and Training Act?
Well, because school boards were effectively being asked to undertake their own interpretation of treaty principles and translate them into governance, policy and classroom practice. It was just creating confusion. It was diverting them time away from teaching and learning. I mean, do you really want school boards to be navel-gazing about what it means to give effect to the treaty, or do you want them focusing on making sure that students have all the resources that they need, that the school is maintained and its assets are looked after properly, which is another role of school boards, and that, you know, the teachers at the school are lifting literacy, numeracy rates, and kids are coming to school, you know, the attendance is being improved. Like, all of those things are important enough for school boards to do without having to wonder about how do we give effect to the treaty, which is actually a crown obligation to iwi and hapu under the 1840 Treaty of Waitangi. So the government's just said, look, focus on your core business and leave it up to the crown to make sure that obligations to iwi and hapu are fulfilled.
The National Iwi Chairs Forum's Pō Tangata Chair Rahui Papa says iwi leaders were deeply disappointed by these last-minute amendments, adding that these amendments were introduced after public consultation had closed. Why were these amendments so last-minute, as he says?
Well, I would disagree with that characterisation of them being last-minute. The policy that was developed and introduced at the Committee of the Whole House stage, MPs from both sides of the House had an opportunity to debate this policy and to ask the Minister and the Chair questions about it. It fulfils one of the ambitions of this government, which is to lift up the role of iwi, Māori, hapū in the system from, having everybody having to consider how to give effect to the treaty and actually restore that obligation on the Crown. And so, this is all going in the right direction. No one should be surprised, least of all the what I would consider the highly politicised iwi chairs forum.
Vocational Education Minister Penny Simmons says the government is focused on boosting educational achievement and closing the equity gap. However, the previous requirements under the treaty had ensured school boards reflect local tikanga Māori, Wātauranga Māori and Te Ao Māori in their planning and policies, among other things. Would this not have the opposite effect in closing the equity gap, especially for Māori students?
Yeah, these are just two completely divergent concepts, aren't they? The equity gap is where you have children and young people arriving at school who don't have any literacy skills whatsoever. They may be living in rural and remote communities where they don't have access to facilities and opportunities, so that they are prepared to get to school. And during their schooling, they're not necessarily supported at home or by their communities to achieve to their potential. So there's a number of reasons for that, and it's very important that educators and the education system focus on that. But can you really imagine that when the Chief sat down with Governor Hobson in 1840, they were like, when our kids go to school, we want to make sure that, that the Treaty of Waitangi is given effect to in the classroom. That doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't make any sense to parents. While there might be some political activists who think it's the right thing to do, kids just need to go to school and learn, and parents need to be confident that they're picking up core skills, literacy, numeracy, and of course the other things this government is introducing, updating the history curriculum and making that science focuses on things like, atoms and DNA rather than spiritual matters and other things.
Lastly, we have seen the Regulatory Standards Bill pass its third and final reading. We touched on this last week and we don't have a lot more time this morning, so I just have one question here. Now that this bill has passed into law, what next?
What it means is that for decades we've had laws that hide compliance costs and allow poor quality regulation just to pile up. Now we're going to have scrutiny so that every law that gets proposed is subject to some very rigorous test. Will this law actually work to solve the problem that it's proposed to do? Will the costs of imposing the law be less than the benefits the law is supposed to deliver? And thirdly, when passing this law or regulation, does it have a severe impact on private property? And if so, why should those private property owners, whether they be businesses or landowners, face that cost when the benefits are public? Now, the laws can still be passed, but all of those questions and answers will be transparent, and so the voters of New Zealand and those who are subject to these laws will have an opportunity to actually chip in at submission stage, for example at select committee stage, and confirm whether they think that it's actually fair to pass such laws which propose impositions on people, even though the law might not actually work and might cost more than the benefits it creates. Anyone involved in business, anyone involved in any kind of delivery, whether it's a community organisation, voluntary organisation, would know you don't start doing stuff unless you know it's going to work and it's actually going to deliver better benefits than the budget you've got to deliver it. So, that's what we've done for Kiwis, and ACT is really, really proud of it.
That was the ACT Party's Simon Court on some developments in the charter school space, the amendment to the Education and Training Act removing a clause requiring school boards give effect to Te Tiriti o Waitangi, and the Regulatory Standards Bill passing its third reading.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.